Hi, I'm Jen White, and this is The Morning Shift. Chicago voters wanted change, and they got change. Despite a number of longtime aldermen holding on to their seats, a real throw-the-bums-out vibe pervaded the recent municipal election. That vibe is most clearly embodied in the six new aldermen who ran as Democratic Socialists. You thought there was five. Well, yesterday the Chicago Board of Elections announced that Rosana Rodriguez Sanchez beat incumbent Deb Mell by a razor-thin 13 votes. And her colleagues are already making their voices heard, speaking out against the two mega developments, Lincoln Yards and the 78, approved by the current city council last week.
For the next 23 years, we're going to be giving up billions of dollars in tax dollars. When we know across this city, we have needs in our schools, in our neighborhoods, in our parks. It's irresponsible.
Joining me now to discuss their agendas are the man you heard right there, Alderman-elect Daniel Espada of the 1st Ward, also with us, Alderman-elect Byron Sikcho-Lopez of the 25th Ward, and Alderman-elect Andre Vasquez of the 40th Ward, who talked about what their victories say about Chicago politics.
I think it says a lot about just the moment we're in, that the public itself spoke. And, you know, when you look at the mayoral race, like all these factors or variables factored in, right, that people wanted change. They wanted to move away from the old style of Chicago politics because it had not served them well. So I think it created an opportunity for folks like myself, like Rosana, like Daniel, to make the case of what government can look like going forward.
I want you to explain a little bit more about democratic socialism and how you define it, how it's different from self-described progressive democratic politics.
So I would say what's interesting to me is I came to democratic socialism as a concept, as an ideology, relatively late in my political life, but it's a set of values that I had been organizing with for years through my work with the groups like Logan Square Neighborhood Association and others. We always believed in democratic control over the decisions that were facing our community. We always believed that we needed public solutions for public problems. You know, it's only in the last year that I really learned, oh, well, there is a name for that set of political beliefs, and it's democratic socialism.
It's very similar, right? I think sometimes what I get concerned of is that people try to categorize themselves rather than talking about the common ground and values we share, right? So I'm someone who, as a product of the city, I was gentrified out of neighborhoods, went to four different public schools. I always felt, right, that people need to be at the forefront and have a seat at the table. Understanding democratic socialism is validating those thoughts that I already had really helps. And I think a lot of people, if you ask them, do you think that neighbors should be the ones making the decision when it comes to budget and zoning, they're all going to agree, right? You don't get a lot of dissonance there. So I think putting the category on it helps for some folks to define it. But ultimately, I think there's a lot of overlap and common ground with a lot of folks who want to move our city forward.
Well, the city council recently voted to approve $2.4 billion in public subsidies to support the Lincoln Yards and the 78 mega developments. And when the council voted, you all joined protesters outside City Hall. Alderman-elect Sikcho-Lopez, tell us about that decision.
I was hearing my colleagues talking about the difference, right, of having now Democratic Socialists of America in City Council. And we saw from day one how many of us are challenging some of these decisions of awarding $2.4 billion in TIF money without a democratic process. We're talking about a group of people that I think is a majority in the city who believes that the economy needs to be democratized. We need to have democratic principle processes when we make these such decisions. Yesterday, we held a public meeting about the 78. The residents were not even aware of the project, and it's the biggest project in the history of Chicago, with $1.1 billion awarded to a developer that doesn't have a full plan yet. So those are the kind of decisions that we are questioning. And we said, delay the vote, do the principal thing so that we can talk about equity. We talk about affordable housing. We talk about local hiring and many other questions that are still pending. Those are the kind of decisions that we saw for way too long under the previous administration that have created a massive disparity across the city, violence, and those are the consequences of bad policies.
Well, Mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot called on City Council to delay that vote until she took office. She said she had several concerns about the project, including the number of affordable housing units included.
I wonder how you hope to work with her once you take office in May. The project is going forward as it stands right now. What options do you think are open to you?
There's still a lot of things that we need to discuss. The issue of affordable housing. I had a good conversation a few days ago with Mayor-elect about the importance of discussing a fair and adequate ARO, an affordable requirement ordinance that speaks to the needs of our city. Obviously, the city needs development. But what remains the question is that, well, the city also needs affordable housing. The city also needs employment that reaches the poorest neighborhoods in our community. The South and the West Side continue to be disinvested. So how do we make sure that these resources are distributed across the city so that we start addressing some of the key issues that we have in our city, which is an issue of inequality? We have areas that have all the resources in the world. Now we're going to put another $2.4 billion, while areas in the South and West Side continue to see schools polluted or contaminated with lead. Schools that have an infrastructure that is crumbling. We see the massive unemployment in the poorest communities in our community, and the violence that is a result of all that. So how do we talk about these issues as well as we talk about development? We want to talk about both. We want to talk about development, but also we want to talk about equity.
Your colleagues are nodding along. Alderman-elect LaSpada, jump in here.
Well, because I knew you were getting to equity there, which is the question of not only fighting for my ward, but thinking about communities on the South and West Side that have been historically disinvested, even within the first ward. Who are the populations and individuals who have been historically felt the pressure of being pushed out? And equity is not a ideological conversation or political conversation. It's a conversation about what boils down to life and death choices for our communities. And I think that's why organizations like United Working Families actually brought us all together to participate in that action of civil disobedience. And I will say, having six aldermen-elect sitting down in the street together, bonded in unity and solidarity for working families, that is something that has not happened in a long time in the city of Chicago.
Alderman-elect Vasquez, I want to get to this idea of equity and the way city council typically functions, where aldermen are responsible for their wards. They want to make sure the people in their wards are taken care of. These are people who are going to reelect them.
That's right.
How does that model of governing work either with or against this issue of equity citywide?
If you do a good job by your neighbors, you're actually given the latitude to be able to legislate. So if we're really grounded on being able to solve the very local constituent issues, we can legislate in a manner that's actually better for the whole city. We want to end segregation because that is untenable for the city as a whole. We need to be investing in the neighborhoods that need it the most. I think the concern that people have under the current system is that when you're giving something to someone else, that you're losing something out of that. And we need to change that dynamic. The way it actually occurs is we're giving away money to corporations and developers that don't need it, and we all suffer for it. But when we're thinking about the city as a whole, if you want to tackle public safety issues, if you want to make sure we're addressing the root cause of the violence in the city, we need to be investing in neighborhoods that haven't had it. So rather than having developers think about, oh, how am I going to figure out my financials, taking into account how much tax subsidy I'm going to have? They should be thinking, what is the extra cost I have to pay to invest in the city I'm going to be profiting from? And in order to get them to think that way, you need legislators that stand their ground and are able to make that case. Say, look, we want something that's a win for everyone, not just the developer. We need to make sure that we're actually growing a middle class in this city because people are moving out because they can't afford to live here.
Okay, quick yes or no answer here, and then we'll circle back and talk about why. Lori Lightfoot says that on day one of her administration, she wants to end aldermanic prerogative. That's this unspoken rule that aldermen have the final say on development in their wards. I'd love to hear from each of you whether or not you support that move. Daniel LaSpada.
As it currently exists, yes.
Andre Vasquez.
Ditto.
Byron Tichel-Lopez.
Ditto and yes.
Okay. So let's talk about the why behind that. Daniel LaSpada.
Because we've seen where the abuses have been. You know, I've seen it in the first ward where zoning was used to punish political opponents or reward campaign contributors. We've seen it across this city, how aldermanic prerogative has been used to further segregation economically and racially. That has got to go. The city of Chicago is calling out for it, but it doesn't mean that aldermen and their communities shouldn't have a strong voice in how zoning and development moves forward. So I think it's about reforming that process once we say this is what we're leaving behind?
Alderman-elect Vasquez, other than aldermanic prerogative, what are some of those key ethics issues you want to tackle when you're in office?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it's definitely coupling together ethics reform as well as campaign finance reform, right? So some of it is making sure that the aldermanic role is a full-time job. Like, you can't look over 50,000 people in a ward and not think it's a full-time job. So we need to eliminate the possibility for conflicts of interest. I think that would be helpful. I think having an inspector general that has the ability to subpoena and audit the council and really has teeth, right, to make sure that everything is above board. For campaign finance, I think we need this is something to work towards, is having a publicly financed small donor matching system for candidates who don't accept corporate PAC or developer money. Because what is at root with the corruption that's occurring is this influence of big money. I think aldermanic prerogative is a piece of all of that. You know, I think the conversation is, how do you rein that in? Something that's a large development that's using TIF funds or off-siting units, I think you need more than just the alderman of that area weighing in. It's something that the council should be speaking towards.
We got a call from Mike in the loop who has a quick question. He says, you called the passage of the 78 undemocratic. Do you oppose lame duck aldermen and mayors passing legislation? Anyone want to chime in on that one?
Absolutely. It's irresponsible to pass legislation on such a big project without a scrutiny. I mean, we should have a long conversation, a serious conversation about this project. You know, this is a $10 billion project. So, of course, we need to have not only a democratic process, but a technical discussion on how we're going to implement such a big project in our communities. Yesterday, we were talking with residents about, well, traffic. You know, are we privatizing the riverfront? How much affordable housing? I mean, there are so many questions and not a lot of answers. So how we approve a project that is still working some of these details. To me, it's irresponsible to do such a thing. And I think that we need to start discussing projects and approving only when the residents have approved them and when they're comfortable with these projects.
We've only got a couple of minutes left, but I want to talk about what it means to stand behind progressive policies that would include expanding public resources to schools, mental health clinics, things like that, at a time when the city literally cannot find the cash to pay upcoming pension spikes. How do you make this work? Alderman-elect LaSpada, I'll come to you first.
I mean, number one is thinking about progressive revenue. How do we find fair ways for the corporations and wealthiest in the city to pay their fair share? The other part of it is thinking about, I mean, honestly, efficiency. I was able to meet with the Inspector General's office where they've conducted scores of audits that identified hundreds of millions of efficiencies that don't reduce services. They just help the city work better. Few, if any, of those audits have been brought up for hearings before subject matter committees in this city. That is a great place for us to start at.
Alderman-elect Vasquez?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of it is obviously us advocating for more investment at the state level, right, and finding resources that matter. But I think when we're talking about investment, a lot of people were not asking the same questions when it came to giving $1.3 billion or $2.4 billion. So to then make that case when we need to invest in people and our children and our future, I don't necessarily accept the premise sometimes of that. I think when you actually invest in your people, you reap way more dividends over the long term than you do giving it to a developer who presents themselves as a job creator, because we don't actually see that manifest itself. So I think it's absolutely important that we talk about the city's finances and how we direct them. But it's really about showing what alternatives to the way it's been run could be, because I think we're better served by it.
Well, we have to leave it there. That's Alderman-elect Andre Vasquez of the 40th Ward. Also in studio with me this morning, Alderman-elect Daniel LaSpada of the 1st Ward and Alderman-elect Byron Sikcho-Lopez of the 25th Ward. Let's turn now to WBEZ City Politics reporter Becky Vivi for some context and analysis about what we just heard and some other political news. Becky, welcome back.
Hi, Jen.
So there were three wards where the races were just too close to call on the runoff election day. So it came down to mail-in and provisional ballots. Before we get to that, was there a flood of mail-in votes?
You know, what I understood from the Board of Elections spokesman Jim Allen was that it had really slowed to a trickle in the last couple of weeks. The results have shifted a little bit, but, you know, handful here, handful there. And we did have a higher number of mail-in ballots, around 60,000. And in 2015, it was more like 40,000. So we're seeing more people choose that option.
So we're talking about the 5th, 33rd, and 46th wards. And let's talk about the 5th first. Remind us what's going on there.
Yes. So this is longtime Alderman Leslie Hairston. She faced a challenge from Will Calloway, and it looks like Hairston will secure that seat and get another term. An official tally for her is 176 more votes than Calloway. That's a pretty decent margin at this point.
What about in the 46th?
46th ward is James Kappelman's ward. He was going for a third term. He was elected in 2011, and he appears to have held on to that seat by 25 votes, very also narrow margin, against challenger Marianne Lalonde. And then we had the 33rd, which is the razor thin.
How many votes are we talking there?
The number of votes that separate the challenger from the incumbent is 13. And that is incumbent Deb Mell, who was appointed in 2013 and won her first election in 2015. Her father held that seat from 1975 until 2013. So it's a long family kind of dynasty. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned earlier in the program, the challenger, Rosana Rodriguez, appears to have unseated her.
Now, will there be a court challenge in that ward because the margin is so narrow?
So in Chicago, there's a little bit of out of order of operations going on. In the 46th and the 33rd, all four candidates filed necessary paperwork on April 8th, so 5 days after the election, to preserve their right to have a court challenge. So all of those filings are on record at circuit court. So it is likely that both of those losing candidates, Mel and Lalonde, could still proceed with court challenges. By the end of April, we'll know if there's going to be a long, prolonged fight in those wards.
Well, I want to go back to something that the three aldermen-elect we just spoke to mentioned. They seem confident that they can enact a very progressive agenda despite the fact that the city's finances are in dire straits right now. What did you take away from what they had to say about how they want to approach governing Chicago?
Well, there is certainly a lot of momentum, Jen, right now for changing how things get done inside City Hall. After every election, there is this momentum. And certainly this time around, there were a lot of big fish that fell. Mm-hmm. Vasquez beat Patrick O'Connor. Patrick O'Connor was the mayor's floor leader. He's been on the council for many, many years. That said, there are still many incumbents that have maintained their seats. I was running some numbers and looking at sort of the makeup of the council now that we have these unofficial results. We still have 38 incumbents. And when I look at the Progressive Caucus, which has been the sort of left of center caucus so far, by my count, we're at about 16 or 17 going forward. If you add in some of these newer Democratic Socialist candidates, it will be interesting to see how alliances get formed, because let me remind folks that the magic number is 26. We have 50 aldermen. You need 26 to pass anything. You also have to get your legislation on the floor in the first place. And whoever Mayor-elect Lightfoot puts in charge of her, what they call the Rules Committee, that person will get to green light or red light legislation. And so these new aldermen, there are a lot of initiatives that I think they align with the mayor-elect on. There are some they don't, and it'll be interesting to see how this new council legislates.
And WBEZ political reporter Becky Vivi gets the last word on today's morning shift. Join us here again tomorrow when we bring you the news and conversations that help you better understand and navigate Chicago. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening. Let's talk again soon.